week, at the end of Shish, she came over to me and she asked me, did they know that the second temple wasn't going to last? We're studying about all the suffering and the struggle, the battle, in order to build the second commonwealth. Did they know that the second commonwealth wasn't going to last? So I want to give you first an outline of, I call it an essay that was written by Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and we are going to analyze it in light of the Mefarshim. He's about the only one who speaks it directly, of the Achronim anyway, but let's see what he has to say. By the way, we are in the middle of chapter 10 in Nehemiah. We are in the process of studying the great covenant that was entered into between the Jewish people and God. We're in the middle of the covenant, but we may digress a little bit and go to chapter 11 during the course of this discussion, but we will finish the covenant. In Parashat Bo, the Ramban says the following. I'm going to read just a line or two from the Ramban. On the mitzvah of HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem, this month shall be the first of months unto you. Says the Ramban, Ukvar Hiskiru Rabuteinu, our rabbis have already mentioned, Zeho Inyan, that there are months, and our calendar is based on the months, V'omru, and the rabbi said, Shemot Chadoshim Olu Imanu Mibavel. The names of the months came up with us from Bavel. At first, the months didn't have names, they only had numbers. In all of Torah, do you know what you hear? The first month, Bachodesh HaRishon, Bachodesh HaSheni, Bachodesh HaShlishi, Klal Yisrael comes to Sinai, Uba Ashtei Osar Chodesh, all of the Yom Tovim are identified by the number of the months. There is no such thing as Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, etc. Chazal say, Shmot, the names of the months, came with them from Bavel. Ki Chazal, Amo Kasher, Olinu, we Bavel, the Ramban says, when we came up from Bavel, Chazal, Likro, HaChadoshim, Shenikroim, Beretz Bavel. We gave the months the names that we called them in Bavel. Lahaskir, in order to remind us, Kishalamadu, that's where we lived. Umisham he'eleinu Hashem yidbarach, and from there God brought us up. So there was a sort of a reminder of the Alta Haim, or maybe the Alta Golos. God brought us up from there. Ki Eila Hashemot, because these names, Nisan, Iyar, and the others, are Shemot Parsi, and they are Persian names. V'lo yimtzorak b'sifrei Nevi'ei Bavel. The only place where you find months designated by a name of a month is only in the Svarim of the prophets of Bavel, Chakar, Zechariah, Malachi. You find it in Megillat Esther a number of times. Chodesh Adar, the 12th month. Chodesh Adar is meant there are months that are mentioned by name. And why is that so? Because the names of the months was something that we adopted in Bavel. And therefore the Gemara says, and so quotes the Ramban, that when they came up from Bavel, they brought with them the names of the months. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky is troubled by a number of things. Why did they forsake Torah, the Torah designation of the first month, second month, third month, and they used these names, especially since some of them are names of idols. Tammuz is used in Tanakh as the name of an idol. There was an idol called Tammuz, and this became the name of a month. Furthermore, the fact is that the second problem of the Baptism is that the spoken language during the period of the Second Temple was Aramaic. They didn't knock around B'Ivrit the way we do. They spoke Aramaic. Except, only one exception. The exception was Torah was written Divrei Torah were written in Hebrew. Otherwise, everything was done in Aramaic. And take a look, in Egypt they were praised. Why were they? Because they kept their language. They kept their names. By the way, that's going to be another problem. I don't think any of us give our children the names that the rabbis of the Talmud had. I'm talking about the Amoraim of Babel. We don't have Abayas and Ravas and Marzutra and Ula. I mean, I can go through all sorts of names that I use. You give one of your kids a name like that, they'd look at you like you came from Mars or from Babel. Over here, you have to give a name that, you know, sounds real Israeli. Chagid, Sarid, just take anything and add it to it, and you got yourself a name. How many people did I insult just now? In one fell swoop. All right.
In our generation, we didn't have any of those.
So no, we didn't have any of those.
We had Yiddish names.
All right. So this is the problem that Rabbi Yaakov presents. Why did we indeed adopt the names of the Babylonian names of months? Why did we retain Babylonian names? Why did we speak Aramaic, which was the language of Babylon? So it says the following. The Gemara in the Sefer Yuma says the following, that there are five things that were missing during the time of the second Bet HaMikdash that were not present during the first. There was no Aron, the Ark. There was no Urim V'Tumim, the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. In total, the fact is, one of the things is, there was no Shekhinah, the divine presence did not come to rest. In other words, fire didn't come down from heaven. The Aron had been hidden away someplace down at the bottom of the Temple Mount during the days of Yoshiyahu, king of Yehuda, because there were invasions of Eretz Yisrael. They were afraid that somebody might take the Ark. Does it mean that they didn't know where the Aron was? No, there's a Mishnah that says that one day a Kohen was walking through the Bet HaMikdash and sort of there was a balata that was not in place, and he started going to check what was there, and he died on the spot. And the Gemara says that the Aron was beneath that. Nobody ever went afterwards to investigate. In other words, it means that they knew where the Aron was, but they never removed the Aron to put it into its place. So it means, again, though they knew where the Aron, the Ark, was, they didn't put it in the Holy of Holies. And obviously there had to be a reason, so why didn't they do it? Says Rabbi Yaakov, it seems to me, he says that those who came up from Babel and built the second Beit HaMikdash knew that this would not last forever. They knew that there was a time limit, and that their return to Eretz Yisrael is not of a permanent nature. And he goes one step further, he says, well, he has to explain why the temporary return. If it's clearly ordained and destined that they're going to go off in exile again, why the temporary return? So he says that the temporary return was because God saw that in the 70 years of the Babylonian exile, the process of assimilation and being submerged by the dominant culture happened so quickly and so rapidly. In a sense, it was similar to the period of Mitzrayim. If they would not have been removed from Mitzrayim, when they were, they could have been lost. God saw that the Jewish people are being lost, submerged by the dominant culture of Babel. 70 years have passed in the Rambam. We once discussed the Rambam that says 70 years later, or really 52 years already, that they're coming back to Eretz Yisrael. They can't talk Hebrew. They can't talk Hebrew. There was already intermarriage. There was already assimilation. We wouldn't have survived. So the Rebbeinu brought us as a great act of kindness. He brought us back to our Eretz Yisrael. There should be a second Commonwealth, and during that second Commonwealth, we're going to recharge the batteries, and we're going to gain the strength that is going to take us through the longer exile. And one of the components of that strength, the shot of the arm, was that the oral law was going to have to become written law. The Torah Shebaalpeh would have to be organized and written, because it's the Torah Shebaalpeh that's going to keep us going during the length of the exile. And therefore it was whatever happened during the time of the Second Temple and during the days of Ezra was of a temporary nature and wasn't permanent at all. And the whole purpose of it all, yes, the construction of the Beit HaMikdash and everything that came along with it was in order to strengthen Jewish identity, in a sense, the inoculation that is going to take them through the long galus. Yeah.
So that means that Ezra was only a Jew, but the population at large didn't know.
Who knew and who don't know? Who didn't know? I don't
know.
However, what's going to be important is we're going to have to test it and see if this is indeed, if this is indeed so. If this is, indeed, I think there are a number of questions that we have to ask on.
Excuse me, Babylonian Talmud written before.
No. After. Now. Yes. Unbelievable. That's one of the great proofs that Rabbi Yaakov brings. Yechezkel, the prophet Yechezkel, said his prophecy before Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi are the ones who called Jews at the end of the, toward the end of the 70-year exile, that they should go back to Eretz and build the Beit HaMikdash. But do you know what had already been committed to writing? Yechezkel. And Yechezkel describes the third Beit HaMikdash. He gives the plans, there are chapter after chapter. What are you talking about? You want a diagram? I'll give you the architect's plans. Yechezkel's plans for the third Beit HaMikdash. The third temple, you see what it says over here? They had this plan. They had this plan before they started building the second. So what should that have left them? What impression should that have left them with? That the second one that they're going to build is going to be a temporary one. That's one of his best proofs, even though I don't think that it's proof positive. Because as we will see, there's one slight disclaimer. That slight disclaimer is, well, let's wait a minute, let's not jump ahead, but told me out. That was very good. So he says, therefore, in order that they should remember, now he seems to leave the impression that people knew, in order that they should remember that this is not permanent, therefore they continued to speak Aramaic, they used Aramaic names, the months were given the Persian and Aramaic names in order that they should sort of not feel that they are here and here permanently. But it was necessary. God saw that it's absolutely necessary because the nation would have been lost. Now I just want to read a footnote here. A footnote on this piece where Od Hosif Rabbeinu, this was put together by one of his children or grandchildren. So he says, Od Hosif Rabbeinu b'kama hizdamliot, our rabbi added on many occasions, Shekach Aleinu Lahavin Ganet HaKamat Medinat Yisrael B'Yameinu. That's as well how we have to understand the establishment of the State of Israel in our days. Of course, in a sefer from a Roshiva in America who was a member of the Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah of Agudas Yisrael, that the name Medinat Yisrael appears in the sefer is already history making. So he says that on many occasions Rabbi Yaakov explained that the establishment of the State of Israel was similar in this respect, in this one respect, to the establishment of the Second Commonwealth. Shela'achar ha'churban ha'gadol, after the terrible churban of the Second World War, v'ha'yiyush she'ne'achaz b'kerev she'edit ha'pleita, and the absolute despair that overwhelmed the remnants of Auschwitz, v'chein lo'or matzavam ha'no'ash v'ha'avud shel yahadut Rusya, and because of the terrible position in which the hopeless, seemingly hopeless position of the Jews of Russia, Siveiv HaKadosh Baruch Hu et HaKamat HaMedina, HaKadosh Baruch Hu caused, he brought about the establishment of the state. This is already an earth-shattering comment. Kedei lechazek et hazeihut ha-yehudit, in order to strengthen Jewish identity, ulekayem et hakesher shebein yehadut ha-gola u-klal Yisrael, and to maintain the bond between the Jews of Eretz Yisrael and the Jews of the Gola. So he says that the two are parallel. Now remember, this is not me that's making the parallel, but it is Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. But he is saying the parallel was that Jewish identity was rapidly, rapidly, disappearing from the Babylonian exiles. They therefore needed a shot in the arm. It's going to be a 600-700-year shot in the arm of a renewed Jewish pride, Jewish identity, Beis Hamikdash, Karbanos, Mishnah, and then there's going to come tomorrow. A lot of things happened during the course of the second Commonwealth, and these are all going to strengthen Jewish identity to the point that they should be able to survive during the course of the long galus of 1900 years that was going to come come afterwards. He also says, therefore, now I'm making all of these points because I'm going to show somebody who's going to say just about the opposite. He says, therefore, they never established a kingdom from the house of David. Not only that, when the Hashmonaim established their own kingdom, which in a sense is a blow to the idea of a king from the Davidic dynasty, it doesn't seem that there were any demonstrations in the streets. Nobody was upset with them. Why wasn't anybody upset with the Hashmonaim, Kohanim, who are usurping the kingdom? So he says, it all fits into the same pattern. Since they understood that this is not going to last and this is not the real redemption, then a king from the house of David is unnecessary. It's not in the cards. Just like we're talking Aramaic, just like our months are the months of Bavel, we already have the plans for the third Beit HaMikdash, and therefore all that they understood that for a period of time they have this. Now, final comment that is made by Rabbi Yaakov, and here I think he protects himself from how he might be attacked. In the Shira of Yashir, at the end of the Shira it says, Ad Ya'avar Amcha Hashem, Ad Ya'avar Amzu Kanita. In the Shira, every day we say, until, you know, take care of them, until your people, God, cross over into Eretz Yisrael. And then the second part of the pasuk repeats it, Ad Yavar Amzu Kanita, until this people whom you have acquired will pass over into Eretz Yisrael. It means the pasuk is talking about two entries into Eretz Yisrael, Ad Yavar Amcha Hashem, and Ad Yavar Amzu Kanita. The difference between the first entry into Eretz Yisrael and the second is in the pasuk. By the first entry, the name of God is mentioned because they came in miraculous fashion. Ad Yavar Amcha Hashem, Ad Yavar Amzu Kanita. So he says, which means that really, it could have been only two. It could have been that the second Beit HaMikdash could have become the ultimate in Beit HaMikdash. Avol Gorem HaChet, the sin. What sin, does he say, caused it that the second Beit HaMikdash, the second Commonwealth, was not going to last? Shenit Arvu v'nitbolu ben Agoyim, that they became assimilated and mixed in amongst the nations. V'hutzra HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'go alam v'ofen aray, and God therefore had to redeem them on a temporary basis. Believe not by it, Shani, build the second Beit HaMikdash, Kedei Shelo Yishtaku Ba'umot, in order that they should not simply drown amongst the nations of the world. Did they all know this? I mean, there are certain indications that Rabbi Yaakov would hold that they did know, because remember, they continued to talk Aramaic and they used the Persian months. It's not terribly clear whether it of necessity had to be that way. I can quote Gemaras where it seems to be that it didn't have to be that way. And some of these Gemaras I've quoted in the past. Resh Lakish, who says, I hate you Babylonians. Would you have come on Mars in the days of Ezra? God would have done miracles for us as he did in the days of Yahushua. There's a Rashi in Yecheskel toward the end of the description of the third Beit HaMikdash. Rashi in chapter 43 of Yecheskel says the following. Ru'uya haita bi'oshniya shel Ezra, kebi'a rishona shel Yahushua. The second entry into Eretz Yisrael in the days of Ezra could have been like the entry in the days of Yahushua, bizroa, with an outstretched arm, ubenez, And with a miracle, this is the Gemara that we told you, Kedidar Sinon, Ad Yavar Amcha Hashem, Ad Yavar Amzu Kanita. Ubinyan Zemi Oz Hayaroi Lehem Kisha Olum and Agola Legulat Olam. Rashi says that building that they built could have been the building that would have been the result of an eternal redemption. Elo Shagora Machet, Shelo Haitat Shuvatam Hogenet. The sin was that their tshuva was not the proper tshuva. Amanas Shelo Lachto V'yotzu. Therefore, because their tshuva was not proper, they came with the permission of Korosh and they built it themselves. Alright, Rashi seems to say that there could have been the seeds of eternity in it. Alright? The Ramban, there is a sefer that was written, about a 30, 40 page sefer by the Ramban called Sefer HaGu'ula, the Sefer of Redemption. And I just have to give you some background over here. When I said that we're going to take a look at chapter 11, let's take a look at chapter 11 in Nehemiah for a moment. I still owe you half of chapter 10. But we're learning this chapter 11 because we are only a few days away from Yom Yerushalayim. I will also be able to comment on what Rabbi Yaakov said, and I'm going to tell you what. You're going to come out of here today with information that you'd never get in any place else. This is the place to be on Wednesday mornings. Bayeshu Sorei Ha'am B'Yerushalayim. This is after the great Amanah, the great covenant had been entered into between the Jewish people and God. Bayeshu Sorei Ha'am B'Yerushalayim. The officers of the people lived in Yerushalayim. U'sha'or Ha'am Hipilu Goralot. One of the few places where it's called Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. The Teisha Hayadot Be'adim. You know what the Pasuk is saying? The officers, I imagine, the Chavrei Knesset, etc., lived in Yerushalayim. But otherwise, the city was sparsely populated. So what they did was they drew lots from amongst all of the people that had come on Aliyah. One-tenth have to live in Yerushalayim. One-tenth, that's what it says. U'sha'or Ha'am and the rest of the people, Hipilu Goralot, they drew lots, Lahavi, in order to bring Echad Min Ha'asara, 1 out of 10, Lashevet B'Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. V'teisha Hayadot Ba'adin, and nine parts will live in the cities around. Okay. Rashi says, they needed Jews leman Yeshu b'Yerushalayim lishmar ha'ir. They needed Jews in Yerushalayim in order to guard the city. If it's not, I imagine it may be that Jews didn't want to live in Yerushalayim because maybe they wanted to. They were an agricultural people. They wanted to live out in the shtachim around Yerushalayim. They didn't have any problem at the time of Kriyat Atit in Yerushalayim, and that you can't real estate prices or do I? Yeah, who knows? They didn't have any of those problems. I'm afraid to say, when I heard Reb Binyamin speaking last night about Anachnu Nechazik at Yerushalayim, Anachnu Nevatzer at Yerushalayim, Anachnu Nivne at Yerushalayim, Anachnu. Did you hear it last night? Mishelo Shama had said, I just only by chance put on Don Shilon, whom I don't like at all, and there I see sitting before me Shamir, Netanyahu, and Peres. It was an absolutely amazing, amazing program. And of course, Netanyahu, he's cool cat. Shamir was great. Peres asked him, Oh my, you want Azza? So that little guy Shamir said, Azati Eretz Yisrael. Call Eretz Yisrael to you. It's all going to be ours. Every last thing of it is going to be ours. And this Peres didn't know what's doing over there. Yeah, he didn't know what hit him. The important thing is that Netanyahu spoke about the necessity to strengthen Yerushalayim, to build, to expand. Lahavi high tech. They have to bring more high tech, and you have to be more milgot for student. I'll tell you, I thought that I'm listening to Ezra and Nehemiah. It's the same thing all over again. Yerushalayim needs to be said. By the way, it is the largest city in Eretz Yisrael today. Anyway, let's not compare it to what it was in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah. They had to import people who were going to live in Yerushalayim. If anything, anybody who lived in Yerushalayim in the 40s or the 50s would have had a sense of what Yerushalayim was in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah. So they had to bring people to live in. The people blessed all of those who volunteered to live in Yerushalayim. Do you understand? Anybody who lived in Yerushalayim was blessed. This is going to be one of the lists. One of the lists in the Nehemiah for all time, a list of the people who moved to Yerushalayim. Do you understand? This is Kisvei HaKodesh, the Holy Writings. These are the heads of the state, Asher Yashu b'Yerushalayim, that lived in Yerushalayim, Ubaadei Yehuda Yashu Ish Ba'achuzato Ba'adeihem, and there were others who lived in the outlying areas, each person in their inheritance. Yisrael HaKohanim Ba'Leviim Ba'Nesinim U'Bnei Avdei Shlomo u'b'Yerushalayim, from Pasuk Dalin on and further, begins a list of the people, the individuals, and the families that lived in Yerushalayim. I imagine it was, you know, like the Harnof telephone book, understand? Or the Yerushalayim the Madrich. There's a Madrich over here. Because the people who lived in Yerushalayim were doing Klal Yisrael a great service. And therefore their names are emblazoned forever in Sefer Nehemiah. But not only does this chapter appear in Sefer Nehemiah, nearly the same chapter is chapter 9 of Sefer Divrei Hayamim Aleph. Nobody knows that. Nobody looks at Divrei Hayamim. They're scared of Divrei Hayamim. They're frightened out of their wits. Because it's difficult. Who said why? You. Well, when's the last time you opened up an Ezra and Nehemiah? You had to wait until you learned Ezra and Nehemiah before. Okay, all right. Okay, take it back. Okay, take it back. Right. You don't remember that one. Okay. All right. Chapter 9. Yes? That's not a feeling. That was the truth. Yerushalayim was a city in ruins. It was a city that was open to all sorts of attack or fear of attack. Why don't you check with friends that you may have in Tel Aviv? When's the last time they visited Yerushalayim? How many periods have there been over the last 10 years that school children stopped coming on trips to Yerushalayim? Do you remember the period of the Sakinaim, the period of the stabbings in Yerushalayim? People didn't come to Yerushalayim. How many periods have there been like that? Right now, I would say, is a calmer and a quieter period. But you find enough people living along the coast that they love to Yerushalayim. No, they wouldn't go to Yerushalayim. Now, here we're talking at a time when Yerushalayim was really, you know, open to all sorts of enemies that wanted to make it difficult to live in Yerushalayim, and therefore what became necessary was they had to ask people to volunteer to come to Yerushalayim. That's exactly, and we have the same situation over here. And let me ask you, do I have to go back 50 years when Yerushalayim was cut off from the rest of the country? They had to build the Burma Road in order to get the supplies into the city. You're looking at a Yerushalayim today that I don't think it's had a better period in 2,000 years. It hasn't been better to live in Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is a boom town right now. But it was not so most of its history. What are you talking about? Huh? Before 67, what was Yerushalayim? Huh? Dangerous isn't the word for it. Before 67, I told you a number of times, I learned here in Yeshiva in 55 and 56. Now, there were all sorts of attacks. The Fedayin attacks began in 55 and then went through 56. Terrorists coming in at night. People were being killed night after night after night. And a few blocks from here, there was a brick wall that separated the two parts of the city, and there was barbed wire. And I'll tell you, Beinenu, there was a period that it got so bad that the yeshivas, I mean, we're living through it again, I don't know if anybody remembers that, where the yeshivas were under pressure, but I think it was not so much under pressure, I think it was a self-imposed pressure, that there are soldiers all over falling, and boys are sitting in the yeshiva, and how big was the yeshiva world then? So the Rosh Yeshiva got together, and they volunteered all of the yeshiva bachim in Yerushalayim to dig a series of trenches going through the whole city. I was there. I was digging. To dig in Yerushalayim was a difficult place in the world to dig. You cannot imagine. Every few centimeters you'd come up against a rock and you'd need 10, 15 oiz gevek, the yeshiva bracham, you understand, to move the rock. We didn't have tractors. We didn't have these big things that go in. With our bare hands, we dug. I mean, hundreds of yeshiva rachim. That was the sum total of yeshiva rachim. We dug the trenches so that they would be able to move troops unseen by the Jordanians who were. I'll tell you how close we were to the Jordanians. We were digging the trenches, and they opened up fire, and they killed a yeshiva rachim. Who happened to be an exceptional young man. He was a friend of mine. That Levaya, 2-3 hours later in Yerushalayim, I'm telling you, the city was shaking. I couldn't even, you know, I didn't know. I would imagine that it was someplace near, I don't know why I had the picture of Ramat Eshkol, someplace around there, Ammunition Hill. We were digging, and they opened up fire. You were able to see them standing there. It was a dangerous city to live in. It was a difficult city to live in. There was nothing here. There was nothing here. You could walk through the whole city in 25 minutes. From one end to the next. That's what we're talking about here. And here, at this point, it was much worse. We're talking about people who had come back, so the sum total of Jews in Eretz Israel, the sum total of Jews in Eretz Israel was, say, 50,000, 60,000. And of the 50,000, 60,000, how many do you think wanted to live in Yerushalayim? It was more pleasant to live out in the countryside. So now comes the big problem. The big problem is this same chapter 11 in Sefer Nehemiah. Is chapter 9 of Divrei Hayamim Aleph. Now, I'm going to read Divrei Hayamim. Divrei Hayamim, chapter 9 begins, V'chol Yisrael Hityachasu. What's terribly important over here is the following. The first 8 chapters of Divrei Hayamim are a genealogy of the families of the Jewish people, and it starts from Adam. Adam, Shait, Enosh, Kenan, Halalel, Yaden, Chanok, Metushelach, Lamach. Anybody who wants to learn the 10 generations from Adam to Noach and the 10 generations from Noach to Avram, all you have to do is learn the first few psukim in Divrei Hayom. And then when it comes to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, it really gives you the yichus, the genealogy of the tribes of Yehuda and Binyamin. Now, we come to chapter 9. Chapter 9. And chapter 9 tells us that all of the... it already takes us to the Jews who came back from Babel. And that they had, their genealogy had been checked. Yes, they were kosher Jews. V'hayoshvim harishonim, and the first settlers, Asher baruchu zatam ba'oreim, were in their cities, Yisrael, HaKohanim, HaLevim, Banisim. Ubi Yerushalayim Yashvu, and in Yerushalayim they resided, and they begin the whole list that we have in Nehemiah chapter 11, we have in Sefer Divrei Hayamim chapter 9. First, it doesn't make any sense. The whole thing doesn't make sense. if they would have given us, there are two other genealogies in two other lists of names in Ezra and Nehemiah. The two other lists are the lists of those families that came Aliyah. That's not the one that appears in Sefer Divrei Hayamim. The list that appears here is only the list of those who lived in Yerushalayim. Why did he do this? Why did the author of Divrei Hayamim give us 8 chapters in which there's a genealogy of the Jewish people concentrating on Yehuda and Binyamin, and then plunks down in the middle, chapter 9, those who lived in Yerushalayim, chapter 10 begins Jewish history. He starts with the kingdom of Shaul ben Kish and goes through Jewish history until, what's the end of Divrei Hayamim? The end of Divrei Hayamim are the same 3 psukim that begin Sefer Ezra. The permission granted by Koresh for Jews to go on an Aliyah. So I saw some of the Mepharshim who say the following. Ezra wrote Divrei Hayamim. And when Ezra wrote Divrei Hayamim, what he had in mind, and a great deal of this is based on the Ramban. The Ramban in the Sefer HaGeula says that Ezra wrote Divrei Hayamim, and all of Divrei Hayamim, with all of Jewish history, do you know what the purpose of Divrei Hayamim that was written by Ezra? It is the introduction. Big Divrei Hayamim is the introduction to Ezra and Nehemiah. That's what the Ramban says. What does he mean? You know what the Ramban means? The Ramban means the following. Ezra, when he wrote Sefer Divrei Hayamim, since the whole Sefer ends with Koresh's announcement, pronouncement, that any Jew who wants to go on Aliyah can go, which is of course an indication indeed that all of Sefer Divrei Hayamim is the introduction to Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah. But it's more than that. What Ezra was preparing the Jewish people for was the establishment of the Second Commonwealth. And the establishment of the Second Commonwealth, and here we are taking an approach completely different than Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. What he did was the following. Who were the first ones to come on Aliyah? Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel was a direct descendant of the house of David. He was an anacle of the last kingdom of Yehuda, or son of Tzidkiyahu. Who is the one that is the Kohen Gadol that comes together with him? Yehoshua ben Yehoshadach, whom Yechezkel says that family, they are the ones who are going to be the high priests in the third temple. That means, do you know who begins the move back to Eretz Yisrael? A direct member of the royal family. A Kohen Gadol from the family that will serve in the third Beth HaMikdash. Number 3, in Divrei Hayamim and in Nehemiah it says that we learned that they had checked the yichus of all of the Jews that came back from Yehuda and Binyamin, and they knew that all of them are kosher Jews. You have 3 of the pillars upon which to build a holy third commonwealth. But Ezra understood that there's a 4th pillar. Yes, you have somebody from a direct descendant from the royal house of David. You have the Kohanim Gedolim who are going to serve by God's express order in the Beit HaMikdash. You have Jews who have yichus and are ready to build Eretz Yisrael, but you needed a 4th thing. The 4th pillar upon which the commonwealth stands is Yerushalayim. You need Yerushalayim. Everything depends on Yerushalayim. Therefore, since everything depends on Yerushalayim, therefore, do you know what Ezra did when he wrote Sefer Divrei Hayamim? The 8 first chapters of Divrei Hayamim all lead to only one point. That all of the people that we are talking about are good kosher Jews, and from their families settle in Yerushalayim. The list in chapter 9 of those who settled in Yerushalayim, that they were all truly Jewish. And therefore, you know what Ezra has accomplished now? Ezra is now laying the foundations for a commonwealth that should last forever if nothing goes wrong. See, the one thing that Rabbi Yaakov did not explain was this unusual chapter 9 in Divrei Yonim. Seems to be completely out of sync with the whole purpose of Sefer Divrei Yonim. Well, 8 chapters of Jewish genealogy, and then one chapter thrown in over there. Who are the inhabitants of Yerushalayim? Because the second commonwealth, if it is to be a commonwealth forever, depends on a strong and a mighty Yerushalayim. And therefore they blessed the people who lived in Yerushalayim, because the people who lived in Yerushalayim were the fourth and the final factor that was necessary in order to build the commonwealth. We will, Yirat Hashem, see Psukim in Zechariah, where Zechariah keeps talking time and time again about Yerushalayim. Isn't he the one who said, Od yeshvu zekeinim uzekeinot? The elderly are going to sit in the streets of Yerushalayim. Children are going to be playing in the streets of Yerushalayim. And God says, Be'einechem, in your eyes it's going to be a great wonder. Gan be'einai, in my eyes it also will be a great wonder. A Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh is a fundamental factor in the building of that commonwealth. And therefore, so many chapters in Sefer Divrei Hayamim are all only for one thing, in order to bring us the list of people who volunteered to live in Yerushalayim, which is of course a completely our basis on the Ramban and the Sefer HaGeulah, where the Ramban is the one who says that Ezra wrote Divrei Hayamim as an introduction to Ezra, to Sefer Ezra. He wrote it as the introduction. And that's why in his genealogical tables, he deals in the main with Yehuda and Binyamin. He doesn't deal with the other tribes. Because what were the two tribes that made up the population of Eretz Yisrael? Yehuda and Binyamin. There were a number from Ephraim and Menashe. Because even in the early years, before the Churban, there were those from Ephraim and Menashe. Ephraim and Menashe were sort of next door. I mean, the fact is, it was Yehuda and Binyamin, and do you know who bought it on Binyamin? The Mishpucha bought it on Binyamin. Right north of Binyamin were Ephraim and Menashe. Don't we have Eretz Ephraim and Eretz Menashe? Yosef was immediately north of Binyamin. So there, in other words, it was partially Mishpucha, and as things became difficult in the kingdom of the 10 tribes, those who were closest, you know what they did? They crossed the border into Yehuda and Binyamin, and therefore they lived there, and they went off into exile with them in Babel, and then they came back. So here it is. I mean, Ramban is really telling us that a mysterious chapter in Tanakh is nearly the whole reason why Sefer Divrei Hayamim was written. Yes.
Is it possible that the intention was, or there was an awareness that the intention here, literal following of the essence, is to get people in that frame of mind? Ezra went through this book, said, listen, we have the potential to achieve this, and that the intention of Arabs, the people, not really believed, either having proponent belief in it, or the fact that as the process unfolded, it became apparent that they weren't going to pull it off, and they adapted to the reality.
I was made of the language. I'm not dealing with the question of why the names of the months were the Persian names. I mean, some of the proofs that Rav Yaakov brings for his position are pretty good. But they may have to be. I mean, you may be right. It may be that either that they saw that it was not going to be, or there was a loss of faith. I don't know. I was thinking. I don't know what I was thinking anymore. What was I thinking? Maybe along your lines, the idea that they saw that Jews were not coming en masse from Babel. When they saw that Jews were not coming, that's when they began to lose. That's when they began to either lose hope, but then again, can't be sure. They must probably had 150 years later, when all of a sudden they achieved independence in the days of the Chashmonaim. Except, of course, that it may have been reason for them to think, we still stand a chance. You know, maybe Jews are going to start coming now that we've established our own kingdom. You know, things, there were other opportunities. You know, the point really, according to the Ramban, a different Ramban that we once learned, the turning point that really signed and sealed the fate of the Second Commonwealth was 100 years before its end, when there was civil war between the two brothers, the last two brothers of the house of the Hashmonaim, Hyrcanus and Aristobulus, and they invited Rome in to be the mediator, the arbitrator between the two of them, and that of course was the tragic mistake that ultimately led 100 years later to the destruction. But I'm saying that it had the potential. Now, I can understand Nehemiah's, Yecheskel's plan for the third Beit HaMikdash. Listen, the second Beit HaMikdash was rebuilt by Herod. And he changed drastically the structure of the Beit HaMikdash according to the Ramban. Some of the things that Herod did were taken from Yecheskel's description of the third Beit HaMikdash. He made he used a number of the architectural plans. It could have been the second Beit HaMikdash could have been refurbished in all senses and have become the third Beit HaMikdash. But I did. What I really wanted to do today was explain, number one, why the unusual chapter 11 of Sefer Nehemiah, that, you know, it is the same chapter twice. It appears twice. It's the same chapter 9 in Divrei Hayamim. And the fact that if there's going to be a listing in Divrei Hayamim, why not the listings that we have in chapter 2 in Ezra, that was repeated again in chapter 6 of Nehemiah, which was the list of all of the people who came on Aliyah? No, the important list was the list of those who lived in Yerushalayim. Tell me, doesn't that make you feel great? That was the purpose of it all. And there's a beautiful Vilna Gaon, the Gra. Oh, the Gra. There's a difficult pasuk. Divrei Hayamim, in Divrei Hayamim chapter 8. I'll find the pasuk. I got it, I found the pasuk. It says a fellow by the name of Miklot Holid gave birth to Shima. Va'af Hema. They too, this is in chapter 8, before we come to chapter 9. Va'af Hema, Neged Acheyem, Yoshvu B'Yerushalayim Im Acheyem. And they, Neged Acheyem, it's chapter 8, Pasuk 32. Listen, Afhema, they too, Neged Acheyhem, the words Neged Acheyhem are difficult. The word Neged Acheyhem usually would mean against their brothers. They lived in Yerushalayim, in Acheyhem, with their brothers. What's the pasuk mean? So the Vilna Gaon says Neged Acheyhem over here means in place of their brothers. In other words, they were the ones. Every family had somebody living in Yerushalayim. He was, and this is already told to us earlier already in chapter 8. In other words, this pasuk is setting the stage for what chapter 9 is going to tell us. That every family wanted to have somebody living in Yerushalayim. And somebody who was living in Yerushalayim really was representing a family out there. So that in a sense, Yerushalayim became, by virtue of its population, representative of all Klal Yisrael. Everybody had somebody in Yerushalayim. And the construction of Yerushalayim and its well-being was this, as I call it, the fundamental factor in the establishment of the Second Commonwealth. So of course the approach that I've always taken is that it could have been. It was one of the great tragic missed opportunities. Rabakov, of course, goes further and says that the whole Second Commonwealth was only intended to be of a temporary nature. I mean, there's another problem that, according to Rabakov, So what's the whole list of Averis? The second Bet HaMikdash was destroyed because of, say, the one that everybody knows is Sinat Chinam. Which is,
if not for Sinat Chinam,
it wouldn't have been destroyed. It may very well be, that the exile in Babel was a briefer exile because of the fact that Jews may very well have been, in Mitzrayim, Jews were able to last about 210 years before they were ready to be submerged completely. In Babel, they didn't last more than 70. But there's another problem, that's Rabbi Yaakov. The other problem is, but the majority of Jews remained in Babel. Majority of Jews remain in Babel. Unless we will say that the Jew in Babel derived strength from the issue of an Eretz Yisrael. He got strength and he got identity and he felt connectedness. In other words, real Zionists should live there, phony Zionists will stay in Babel, but that Eretz Yisrael remained the source of strength even for the Jew that was in Babel. That might very well be what Rabbi Yaakov meant. That Jewish identity was strengthened by the fact that there was a fledgling Jewish state being built. But we still, with my approach, I don't answer the questions of the language. I don't know, I can say Balabantish in Teruzin, Balabantish in Teruzin, there's a lot of English being spoken in this time, so the English, not the... in Baalpark, the pizza shops are called Tel Aviv, Golan, and Jalayan, and in Jerusalem, they're called Brooklyn, New York, Miami. In a certain sense, we... Huh? What, did I do something wrong? It's not going to fly, go ahead.
No, go right ahead. I agree with it.
No, you're not being difficult at all.
I hold on to the Arab American sense. He's taking on our faith. He has quantity to say the thing we will agree myself and ship will come
out. And by the way, as I was reading of Yaakov Kamenetsky, the thought kept coming through my mind, we have revived the language here. It's a real wise
spoken language,
which is something that they didn't accomplish during the course of the second calendar.
We have a lot of other things going for us over here.
Those facetious remarks that are made about
Peter Schauffler.
Only I'm trying to. What am I going to do
about the questions that you asked here?
Why did they speak Aramaic during the period of
the second
temple? Yeah, and we went through 1900 years and we were able to revive it in a period of years. They only had 70 years that they were away from it.
They couldn't revive the language.
What are you talking about?
They couldn't revive the language.
We were able to do it after 1900 years later, which is, by the way, an awesome accomplishment. An awesome accomplishment.
In a sense, that's another indication that the period in which we live,
it is
advanced over the period.
We don't have
Betamidash.
But we have in the present.
We have a much, much larger population than they
had at the time of Ezra.
They had a much,
much larger population. Talk about
Think of that. And you have more people. Most probably there are as many people learning Torah as to believe the newspaper. So,
what are you saying?